Welcome to this week's episode of Trista's Plate Story Podcast. I'm Trista Polo from iwokeupawesome.com, and I am your host. Each week, we learn the story behind that vanity plate. The one you saw driving down the road? What did it say? What did it mean? Why did they choose it? This week, we meet No Surrender plate owner, Skip Weissman from the Hudson Valley, New York. Skip is a former professional baseball executive and a current professional speaker, business coach, and author. Skip is a big fan of Bruce Springsteen and chose his plate in honor of one of the boss's best songs. Skip was also the CEO of 5 baseball franchises, and he's responsible for bringing the Hudson Valley Renegades to the home they have had since 1996. As a business coach, Skip helps CEOs and teams work on their communication to increase productivity and profitability. On today's episode, Skip shares his Bruce Springsteen concert experiences. There are a lot. And toward the end of our episode, he talks about the top 3 communication sins that may be negatively impacting your relationships and how to shift them. All right, let's go meet Skip. Hello and welcome to this week's episode of Trista's Plate Story Podcast. I'm here with Skip Weissman of Poughkeepsie, New York in the Hudson Valley. Welcome, Skip.
Thank you, Trista. Great to be here. I'm excited to talk about this.
Awesome. I'm so excited. Now, it's so funny because I have to tell our little backstory. We've known each other for a super long time, many, many years. And I didn't actually realize that you had a vanity plate until we met up at a ribbon cutting of a mutual friend. And what did I think you said, so what's going on? What's new? I'm like, oh, well, I have this podcast. Right. And you're like, oh, well, I have a license plate. And it was like a match made in heaven.
Right. Yeah.
So yeah, tell us about your plate. What's your license plate and what's the story behind it?
Well, the license plate is, if you read it out, it's No Surrender. People get all put all sorts of meanings on that and try to, as you know, probably guess what's the backstory. What does this mean? And around 9/11, it was very interesting because we would get all sorts of people going by and shaking their fists and, oh yeah, go USA, right? We're in this war. We're not going to surrender to whomever, right? And I said, yeah, that's not really what it means. For people who know me best, know that I'm a big fan of Bruce Springsteen. And that is a song that Bruce released on his 1984 album. Is the album that really made him explode as a rock superstar, Born in the USA album. And the song is No Surrender. And it really speaks to him and the band's commitment to making it in music. It's all about the music and not giving up their dream of making it in the music industry. And so I've used that as sort of a metaphor for my own career. When the song came out, I was in my third year in professional baseball. My background, I got my master's degree in sports administration and wanted to be in baseball. And that was really Bruce's music has been a catalyst for my entire career, my entire life since I was 16. Just very, to me, very inspirational, very motivational. And in my third year of baseball, my goal was to become the CEO of a minor league baseball team as quickly as possible. And so that theme of No Surrender just really spoke to me and figured I want to have this around. Now, that was 1984. I didn't get around to putting the plate on my car until 2000 when I got a new car that I thought would be a perfect fit for it. And the car at the time was a BMW Z3, nice little sports roadster. And I really had a lot of self-searching evaluation to do because Bruce has a lot of songs.
Well, that's what I was going to say. I mean, you chose one song out of his whole catalog, and being a fan, I bet it's not the only song of his you love.
Right. And so yeah. I had to do some reflection and figure out the letters and what works and what made the most sense. And your listeners may or may not know much about Bruce. Bruce has another song called Darkness on the Edge of Town, which is in his one, I think it's his best album. It's the title to the album. And so I was going to use Darkness as the license plate title. The car was all black, black exterior, black interior, black top. And that would have fit so perfect. But again, I thought it was too much of a message that people would not have understood or gotten. And it's kind of dark. You know?
I was going to say, not quite as uplifting as you could imagine No Surrender meanings would be.
Right. And so that was my second choice. And I really wanted to do Darkness because I thought it would be really cool. And the song has a lot of meaning for me, too. But I just thought projecting that out outwardly into the world, it it would have been too negative, I think. So people didn't know the reference. So I went with No Surrender.
I love it. Now, you have other songs besides those two that have a lot of meaning for you in Bruce's catalog, and you have really a commitment to participating, not just listening, but live as well with Bruce's concerts. So I would love to have you share a little about some of your experiences. Yeah. In how many concerts of Bruce's have you been to?
I've seen 87 live performances. Okay. That includes three of the Springsteen on Broadway shows. So that was not necessarily a concert, but it was a live performance. I've seen him solo on his own in small theaters, and I've seen him in live stadiums with 80,000 people. And I had the great good fortune to be in a small bar with about 70 other people in the summer of 1999 when he was just hanging out in Jersey, and he went to see a friend of his who was playing, and we sort of stalked him because we knew he'd be there if his buddy was playing.
I was going to say, how did you know he was going to be there?
we had it on good reconnaissance that he was going to show up.
So do you know how many states you have visited and how many countries you have visited to see him live? Do you keep track of that?
Yes, I have an entire catalog of all the shows I've been to. States, I haven't really counted them, but I can tell you from countries I've seen them in the United States, obviously Canada, Germany, Spain, Portugal, Italy, and Ireland.
Wow. Yeah. Now, do you go to the country and then he's there, or do you go to see him and then you're in the country so you'll do some sightseeing? Let's really dig into the Bruce Springsteen fandom of this.
Most of those are planned concert tour trips.
Okay.
Actually, all of them were. The first one, though, was really interesting because 2008, he released an album in 2007, the end of 2007, and he always will tour behind on the albums. 2 years before that, in 2006, my wife and her family, is from Ireland, scheduled a family reunion for May of 2008. So 2 years in advance, they planned this reunion. People came from all over. It was a week-long event. It was really a lot of fun. And so in December of 2007, about 2 months after the album comes out, he announces his European tour. And before I looked at the dates, my wife said, if Bruce is going to be in anywhere in Europe the week we are in Ireland, I will give you permission to take off for a couple of days to go to the concert.
Awesome.
So I'm looking at the tour, and wouldn't you know it, he was playing in Dublin the week of the reunion.
Wow. You couldn't have planned that better if you'd called him up.
Right, exactly. And even better, it was at the end of the reunion. So the reunion ended on Thursday. It was Sunday through Thursday. The shows were Thursday, Friday, and Sunday. We got tickets for the show on Friday, and everything worked out perfectly. It was great. And so that was the only one that was really tied to another event. The other ones were specifically, we went to the shows in Europe, and the Ireland show actually led to the other European shows because I met somebody there at that show. My wife and I met this gentleman who was from Hamburg, Germany, who if you were sitting next to him, you would never know he was German. He has virtually no accent, but he speaks like five languages. And we became really good friends with him and his family. And he came over here. We've seen about 20 shows together since 2008. He's come here. And we scheduled a tour in 2012 where I flew to Berlin. We saw Bruce that night in Berlin. We drove to San Sebastian, Spain. We went to Lisbon, Portugal, and then three shows in Italy. Over a two-week stretch, we saw six shows in 13 days.
Wow.
And we just drove around Europe, and it was one of my best vacations ever. My wife and I both have a really good family in Hamburg, Germany.
I love that. You kind of have a different take on why to travel, how to travel. So you're going to see these concerts, and even especially when you're seeing a bunch in a short period of time, was every show exactly the same?
Bruce is really good at changing up a set list. So he has a standard set list that will change night to night. He'll play about 27 to 30 songs, 32 songs, and usually about half will be the same. The other half, he'll trade in and out, or they'll change the order around, or they'll open the show with something different. So it's always something new. It's been his philosophy and his theory to make each show unique. So if you only get to come to that show in that city, you're going to see something that nobody else will see. And he's really good at doing that. So there's, but the really unique thing, I guess, about the shows, especially in Europe, that my wife thinks I'm absolutely insane about, is we want to get into, this is probably never going to happen again because of the virus thing, coronavirus. But Bruce has a thing called the pit, which is a corral in front of the stage. And that's general admission seating for the whole floor of the arena or the stadium. And then if you so desire, you can try to get into the pit with your general admission ticket. And they only usually allow 1,000 or 1,500 into the corral. So you have to line up to get into the pit. Now, in the United States, it's a lottery. So you line up, you get a wristband, and they pick a number at 5 o'clock, and you line up. You know, whoever gets picked first wins the lottery, and they're number one going in. In Europe, it's just a list. So whoever lines up and is the keeper of the list, some fan club or some person starts their own list, and it's self-regulated. It's actually very, very cool. Everybody is very respectful of each other. You go, who's holding the list? You go to the person who's holding the list. They write your name down on the list. You get a Sharpie, you know, on the back of your wrist, and that's your number. And you have to check in every 3 or 4 hours to keep your space in line. And this goes on for 2 or 3 days.
Wow. I was going to say, so, if it's every 3 or 4 hours, it must go on for a while. So this goes on for days.
Could be days.
Wow. Okay.
So on the European trip with Nils, you know, we would go from city to city. Sometimes, let's say there's a show tonight that we're at, and there's another show tomorrow night, as there was in Italy. People are already lining up for that show. So if we're going to the show the night before, we're going to be a little bit farther back on the list because we can't get there till early the next morning. So, but if you're in the first 200 or 300, you got a good, pretty good spot in the pit, and we're fine with that. So that's the thing. We play the pit game. So my wife says, okay, you're going to Europe for 2 weeks. You got to see something other than just the shows. And so we got to Portugal, and we had pretty much a full day in Portugal before the show. So we did some touring in Portugal. Did you know that there is an Eiffel Tower in Lisbon?
I did not. Is it the same as the Eiffel Tower in Paris?
Built by obviously the same guy, but it doesn't look like that. It's a little more, straight. So I got to go up on the Eiffel Tower in Lisbon.
Awesome.
So that was something cool. And then I did get to see the Leaning Tower of Pisa on our one day in it. Well, we had 3 days in Italy, but only one that we could allocate to doing
non-Bruce things, right?
Because we were committed. If we were just going to the show to get a seat in the stadium, we would have had more time. But we wanted to get into the pit,
right?
So we just played the game, and it's a lot of fun because you're hanging out with people who are there for the same thing, and you're meeting people from all over the world that are traveling from all over. Some people, you know, people think I'm crazy seeing Bruce 87 times, but we met people on that tour that saw all 38. Shows on that European tour that summer. It's like, well, you have a life. Where do you get the money? Where do you get the time off to do this?
Well, I always wondered that, you know, that's like the Dead tours when they were touring. There were people that would just follow them around the country for years. I'm like, but how do you buy food? You know, you got to have somebody paying for all of the things that it takes to be alive.
No, and it's not cheap. The show tickets aren't that cheap. They're about $100 a piece. Plus you got travel, but you got food. So yeah, it's definitely an investment, but it's created some of the greatest memories of my life. And I can't say enough about the experiences I've had.
That's awesome. Is he still touring? Cause he's got to be getting up there now in age.
He would tour if he could. He's supposedly getting ready to release an album that's sort of in the hopper right now. They thought they would be releasing it by now and then going on tour, but I think the whole virus thing has put things on hold. So when he can, I'm sure he will tour again and get the band back together. So the last thing he did was, you know, the two-year thing he did on Broadway in 2017, 2018.
So. Awesome. So you are more than just a Bruce Springsteen fan. You are also a sports aficionado. As you said, you went to school for it, and your goal was to be the CEO of a minor league sports team. So did you reach your goal?
I did. I was lucky enough in my fifth season in 1986 to be in the right place at the right time. And the gentleman I was working for, who was the CEO, we had an ownership group that owned six teams. And I was in Greensboro, North Carolina, and one of our teams in Huntsville, Alabama, had a problem with their CEO, actually had some health issues, and the doctor told him he had to retire. So they promoted my CEO to go to Huntsville, and they asked me to step up. So I was 26 years old when I took over my first minor league baseball team. And that was great. It was also, you know, some growing pains and running an operation at that young age and leading a franchise. But over the next 16 years, from 1986 to 2001, I led five different teams. And in this area, in our area, you know, Trista, where we live, you know, the team is the Hudson Valley Renegades. They've been a single-A affiliate for the Tampa Bay Rays since 1995, and it was my last team here. I spent 8 years leading the Hudson Valley Renegades after actually moving the team from Erie, Pennsylvania to Fishkill, New York to start the baseball team. And that's the thing I'm most proud of in my whole career, starting a franchise, building a stadium, and doing it all right from the very beginning. And it's quite the legacy, and the team is still thriving today.
It really is. And so the Hudson Valley Renegades is what brought you to the Hudson Valley, right?
Yep.
Yeah. Yeah, I've been to many of the games. It's a really fun, family-friendly experience. It's entertaining, and it's also baseball. And it's a wonderful thing to have here in the Hudson Valley. So thank you for bringing it here.
Thank you for the community for welcoming us with unbelievably open arms. I don't know where you were at in 1994. It's been 26 years now. This would have been their 27th season. Not sure what's going to happen. I mean, they're not going to play this year, which is really sad. Mm. When the team came to town at a very challenging economic times for the community, it far exceeded our expectations. We were more successful, wildly successful beyond our expectations. And I love the community. I love being in this area. I grew up in central New Jersey, so it's just 2 hours from where I grew up. I love New York City, and we're close enough to get down there and spend a lot of time in the city. So this is where I made my home for the last 27 years, and we have no plans on moving. We are not, my wife and I are not going to be the folks who retire to Florida. We'll be here.
This is where you'll retire to, right? Right. You already are. Well, you said, I don't know where you were when, so I know where I was. So my husband, Russell, and I were not married, but we were living together in an apartment in the Chelsea Ridge Park Apartments, okay, which is actually just down the road. It's on the same road as the Renegades. And so I remember there were neighbors that were passing out schedules. This is when you don't want to drive home this way, because there's always a ton of traffic that you had to deal with when the game was in town, which is actually, it speaks to the success of the game, right? Because right from the very beginning, it was very well attended. It had a ton of people attending the games, especially when they were home. But the other memory I have, which is actually a very wonderful memory, is one of our friends that Russell went to high school with, and we're still friends today. They actually live in North Carolina, very near Greensboro. So it's sort of weird how you changed places. Yeah. But anyway, so he was living in like Croton area, Yorktown, Croton area at the time. And he loves baseball. And so when he found out that we had this, you know, minor league team coming to our area, we saw a lot more of him. We went and played golf all the time. Like, he was just up here so much more. Yeah. It's only an hour away, but when you're working and busy and life is going, you know, it's hard to get together. And we saw him. His name is Jim. And our other friend, John. We just saw them so much more. And it was really thanks to the Renegades being in town. That was the catalyst.
Yeah, that's great.
So thank you for that, because those are memories I'll have forever, even though he lives really far away now. We don't see him more than maybe once a year, if that.
Yeah. That's a great thing about minor league baseball in the community. It really brings the community together, brings people out. It's a sad summer not to have that for people in our community right now, but we can only do what we can do based on what we're facing. So.
That's right. It certainly is. And it'll be back, I think. We'll be back to normal someday.
Yep.
So you're no longer in the baseball world. You have gone on to become a keynote and motivational speaker. You've written your own courses and speeches and presentations that you use for local businesses and large organizations. So what is your specialty in the realm of keynote speaker?
I speak on leadership, teamwork, and communication, and how to use communication to bridge the gap between leaders and the people that they lead, because there seems to be a real disconnect between how leaders communicate with their people to really motivate them. And I see small business leaders between 6 and 60 employees for the most part making the same mistakes I made as a young leader 30 years ago. And to me, that's sad, and I want to help fix that. And it's really not hard as long as the business owner is open to seeing that, you know, they have some room to grow and that they have tremendous influence just by how they show up and not even what they say, oftentimes is what they don't say, right? And really understanding that they have to lead and practice what they want to see in their people and lead by example and be able to communicate effectively to bring people along with them for in the right way. And so that's my main topic. I wrote a book 2 years ago called Overcoming the Seven Deadliest Communication Sins, A New Standard for Workplace Communication, which really gives the foundation of the seven communication mistakes we all make, not just as organizational leaders, but in families, in our intimate relationships. They really get in the way of our ability to engage with people and build trust and respect.
Yeah, you know, I find with communication that we have to look inward much more often than we look outward for how our communication is. If I look over at you to see what's wrong with your communication, then I'm sort of missing the mark. So what you're talking about of the leaders of an organization being willing to take ownership for the culture, the way people communicate, what's okay to talk to each other,
right.
You know, that kind of cultural stuff and the norms of things all comes from the top. Yep. And yet I think that typically we want to see what other people are doing wrong because that's a lot easier than looking at ourselves in the mirror. So what you're doing is very needed and wanted. And I'm glad to hear that that you have clients that want to take a look at that and really transform that in their organizations. It's got to make a huge difference for their productivity.
Yeah, and it really creates a work environment that people really enjoy going to every day as opposed to dreading going in there. It's magical once the business owner is open to opening up and seeing, not that they're necessarily the problem, but that they're the catalyst for fixing whatever problems there are. And to be really in the trenches alongside their people, learning and growing together as opposed to fixing them or fixing you. I want to bring those people together and learn collaboratively and together as peers. And when they're open to taking that approach, it really works extremely well because it brings down the intimidation factor and the barriers and they see each other as human beings, not boss or, you know, subordinate or employee.
Yeah. Now you wrote the book about the seven deadly sins. I would imagine those are the most common things that you just see over and over and over again that get in the way. Can you give us your top three out of the seven?
Yeah. Good take there because there are three that I call the primary communication sins, and they're primary because they are really global. They really encompass the entire organization. They impact the entire organization when you communicate this way. And they're pretty, you know, they're pretty common and they're sort of stealthy. We know there's a problem, but we don't really know what the problem is. And so that's why it never gets any better because we don't define it. We just know there's something missing. So these are the three that get in the way in the biggest way. One is a lack of specificity. Being non-specific, being very vague in our communication. We're not giving the details that somebody needs to be successful to give us what we need from them. And 99% of the time, it's not malicious. It's just lazy communication habits, and we don't realize. And I have a slew of examples that I share with in my workshops and my programs that people just are awed by. I did that. You know, and we don't understand. The best example I can give you, just to give an easy tip, is stop saying as soon as possible.
Ooh, okay. Say more about that.
Well, as soon as possible, ASAP, however you want to articulate it, means absolutely nothing. Your view of what soon is and as soon as possible is much different than what mine is. based on what we have to do, where we're at, what our priorities are, right? Where we're in the mix of whatever we're doing when you bring that to me and ask to get it to me as soon as possible. So there's no clarity on that. And I can never fulfill that for you because it's never going to be soon enough. We're going to miss some expectation there. And so the challenge with that is twofold, both sides of it. One, you say it, and I understand. I realize I'm not exactly sure what Trista means by that, but I'm also not of the mindset that I'm going to push back and say, Trista, I don't really understand as soon as possible. Can you explain what your real deadline, what your real timetable is so that I can fulfill your expectations and get you what you need when you need it? Most people will not push back and ask. They'll just accept it like lemmings and nod their head and go and then get stressed and figure out, okay, now what am I, where is this going to be in my priority list? And it drives us crazy. And then I get upset with you because you're being too demanding or you're, but no, we didn't have this conversation to flush things out and get clarity around what that means. That is huge. And I tell people, if you just fix that one thing, you can increase your productivity by 50% almost overnight. Just get more specific. The second one is a lack of directness and candor, and it's related to the lack of specificity. We're beating around the bush. We're not telling people what they need to hear in very specific, direct ways. Setting performance expectations, setting goals, telling people what they're doing wrong and how we need them to get better. Most of the times we're beating around the bush. We're being fluffy. We use euphemisms and different things, and we hope that you get it. And then I get nods like you're giving me now, and nothing ever changes. Well, I saw your head nod. It seemed like you were in agreement. You knew what I was talking about, but no behavior or nothing changed.
Yeah.
And now I get upset with you, and then it goes bizarre. So lack of directness and candor. We need to get the gumption to be direct with people and talk about things that we need to say. The third is what I call lack of immediacy, urgency, and promptness, which is a fancy way of saying communication procrastination. We're putting off the conversations we need to have. And things are festering, things are building and growing, time is frittering away. And by the time I get up to gumption to it, or I figure out what I want to say in a direct manner, weeks have gone by. And now I'm coming to you with this thing, and you're thinking, well, why didn't you tell me this weeks ago? I mean, people have been seeing me operate this way for 3 weeks, and now that I look stupid, you made me look bad. Where if you would have told me it in the moment, as I say, at the first most appropriate time, which should be within 48 to 72 hours, we can deal with it and we can make changes, and things don't fester, and we're on the same page much sooner, and we can build trust and respect in that way. Those are the three big ones. And if an organization or a family or a couple even worked on those three areas, things would be so much better, so much nicer, more copacetic. Everybody would be getting along better. But it's hard. We're not trained to communicate this way as we're growing up, and we just pick up bad habits. Most of this is just bad habits. Very little of it is malicious. There's some other communication systems that are malicious but, you know, I think most people are, mean well, and they're just trying to get their needs met. And this is how they learned over time. And we build these bad habits, and nobody ever teaches us any other way.
Yeah, you know, I've developed a leadership style that has kind of answered the problem of the second one that you're talking mm-hmm. about, which is to be direct, but with unconditional love. Mm-hmm. Because directness can come off harsh. So I try and do it in communication like this, as opposed to a text, because I can never tell what people mean in a text. And I know I'm always assuming they mean it the meanest possible way, especially if there are no, I use emojis too to soften the blow in a text.
Those are helpful.
Yeah. Because in a text, you just never know what the person's back tone is. But I mean, every one of the three things that you're talking about, I still say as soon as possible. And if I'm going to be really honest and look at it really clearly, like responsibility here first. Yeah. I say as soon as possible, and I don't want to be tied down to a deadline because I don't know when I'm going to get to it. So that's an interesting aha for me. I've definitely been working on the second one, and I've created that very direct with unconditional love style. which is how I can live with being direct. As long as I know you still know that I still love you, but I'm really direct.
Well, that's important because there's a model that I also teach around leadership, which I call PDR communication, which is prompt, direct, and respectful. And you've got to bring that love component, that respectful component in, or else it's going to be too harsh or deemed too harsh and people will feel disrespected. So you need to bring that respectful part of it, just as you're talking about. I have plenty of people come up to me and say, you know, I have no problem being prompt and direct. Matter of fact, I've been told I'm too prompt and direct. I said, okay, I don't think you can be too prompt and direct. What you're missing is the third component of respectful, which is tone, your body language, the words that you use. Let's take a look at that component. And I think you'll get better results from people.
For sure. It's funny, you know, when I watch people interact and they're just direct and prompt, especially if they're both like that, it can create real animosity. And I think all it is that they just don't feel any love coming from the other person. You're saying respect, I'm saying love. I think they're the same.
And nobody's listening to each other. They're just yelling past each other.
Yeah. That's good stuff, Skip. Really, really good stuff. And you have that's a book people can purchase. Where can they buy that book from?
7deadliestcommunicationsins.com is my website where they can get it. And you can go through Amazon and get it as well. Okay. But if you go through my website, you get a special gift with it. It's a postcard packet of 5 quick reference cards to help you communicate more effectively and take them with you. So
great.
Free gift if you go through my website.
Then we should definitely do it through your website. And I'll have the links of everything in the show notes and the blog post where you can get all this stuff. And then you have a giveaway, though, if I'm not quite ready to commit monetarily to my communication, which, of course, we all should. What's the free gift that you have?
So I just recently created this thing based on what I've been hearing a lot from business owners that I've been speaking to, prospective clients and also my clients, about employees who they're really frustrated with employees and team members who make excuses, blame others, blame circumstances. The dog ate my homework thing from school days. Adults are still doing this in the work environment, if you can imagine, and lack accountability. So I created this thing called your employee excuse eliminator checklist. And it's a list of 5 areas that need to look at in your work environment that are actually causing or potentially causing employees to show up that way. If you go to the webpage, you can download that for free as well.
I'll put the link in the show notes so that we can have just a really easy way to get to it. And thank you for sharing a free gift. I think that would make a big difference.
If you want to reset your work environment and your company culture, there's no better time than right now to do it because we just had this little pause or whatever happened in your company. And we're starting fresh, I call the clean slate start. We can really use that as an excuse in a good way. So
yeah, absolutely. Well, that's awesome. So do you have anything else you want us to know about you, your plate story, or who you are?
Well, first of all, I'm just amazed at where this conversation went to after we just started talking about my No Surrender Springsteen plate. No, I think you've covered it pretty well. The one funny thing about the backstory of this whole thing is we have we had 3 cars. We just sold one. We sold the BMW that the plate was on. And my wife wants to be totally anonymous. She wants to go through life anonymous. She doesn't want to be famous. I want to be on stages and do keynotes and everything. So we're a little bit different in that way. And she hates the vanity plates because everybody knows who she is if she has that on her plate.
Right.
And when we bought the new car 2 years ago, I said, boy, I'd love to get a plate for this car, right? She said, no, I'm done. I don't want any new plates. So we sold the BMW Z3 that had the No Surrender plate on it. And as the gentleman drove away from our home with the car, I walked into the kitchen and she said, you know, if you want to put this plate on a new car, you can. So we transferred the registration and on the new car, and I got to keep my plate. So.
That's wonderful.
Yeah, and I didn't have to ask. I didn't have to beg.
Right.
we use both cars pretty much equally. I probably drive more just because when business was out and about, you know, I'd be doing a lot more driving. She works a mile from home. Now she's working from home mostly.
Yeah.
But even before that, she would walk 60% of the time.
Oh, wow. That's awesome.
To the office and so I would do most of the driving. But yeah, the cars are pretty much equal.
Yeah. Oh, that's great. Well, Skip, I really appreciate you sharing your plate story and more with us today. I always end with asking if you have one question you'd like to ask me just to turn the tables. So do you have one in mind?
So, you know, we've known each other for a long time, but I don't really know much about your whole backstory. Where are you from originally, and did you go to school and college and all that stuff? What's your
my backstory? Okay, so I was born in Tallahassee, Florida.
Oh, wow. Okay.
My dad was going to college there. My parents were very young when I was born. They were sort of like fell in love and ran away together against their parents' better judgment, in fact. I lived in 26 different places by the time I was 18 years old.
Wow.
I didn't live anywhere longer than 2 years. The last place that we lived while I was in high school was in Hicksville, Long Island, because my mom got a job there.
Billy Joel country.
Billy Joel country in his school, which he did not graduate from. Mm-hmm. And so the choir director for my senior year was retiring. And Billy was coming out with the Stormfront album.
Oh, wow.
And he had the choir director choose, I think there were 14 of us chosen to do backup on Leningrad.
Get out of here.
So my senior year of high school, myself and on the album, yeah.
No.
Right? See, I have secrets you don't know about, That's even great. Though we've known each other for a long time. So on the Leningrad album, we didn't get name credit, but it says members of the Hicksville High School Choir. We got to hang out with Billy Joel, and then Chrissy Brinkley showed up with Alexa at one point, and they hung out for a little while, and Mick Jones was there helping produce it from Foreigner. So we got to meet him, and it was like a really memorable, very cool day. And I still have the music signed by everybody from the day.
That's great. That's a great story.
Because
Billy Joel is my second favorite.
So. Yes. Yeah. Awesome. But because of Hicksville, I ended up in New Paltz because it was a state school. And that's where I met my husband. And he's a sailor and he grew up in Croton. And so we've lived here ever since.
Very cool.
Ta-da! Thanks for asking. That was a fun story to tell. I haven't pulled that one out of the trunk in quite some time. And thanks for being on, Skip. It's really fun. You know, we've known each other in professional networking circles for a long time. So to get to talk to you on my podcast about some totally different stuff was a nice change.
Cool. Yes, it was. Great conversation. Great interview. Appreciate the interest in my work and my license plate.
Absolutely. Thanks so much, Skip. Enjoy the rest of your day.
Thanks.
Thank you for joining us for this week's episode of Trista's Plate Story Podcast. Please subscribe to Trista's Plate Story Podcast to get the story behind all those vanity plates driving with you on the road. And if you would like to nominate the owner of a license plate, including you, or visit any of our partners and sponsors, come and see us at platestory.com. That's PL8story.com, and give us the details. If you enjoyed this episode, please drop a review and give us a share. I'm Trista Polo, wishing you well on the road to your next adventure.